Hey, what's going on?
Hey.
Hello, I'm sorry. I was distracted. What's up?
Mr. Caney, fancy a cult cast, do ya?
I do.
Hello, and welcome to the cult cast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you are going to hear all this week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. I'm back with my bloke friends, Leander Caney. We got Alex Excelsior Heath, Buster Heine, my old cult cast chums. Hello. And hey, Buster.
Oh, sorry. Hey.
I don't know who just talked. What a show, what a show we're going to have this week. We finally have big news from Apple after it seems like it's just been forever. It's been a really slow year. Yeah. I mean, we had the MacBook Air updates and that was cool, but before that, it's been dry. So this is an exciting time to be an Apple fan. Let the army of products begin. But before we talk about that, I want to thank Squarespace.com for sponsoring the show. Boy, you know, you guys have heard me say this before, and I mean it earnestly from the bottom of my heart. Squarespace is great. And if you guys need a website, Squarespace has everything you need to build a professional website that'll look great on any device that visits, all without tickling or touching any of the code. You can just drag and drop, bing, bong, boom. You're going to have a great-looking website. I've had a lot of you go sign up. I know because Squarespace has told me that, and I know you guys are building websites, and I've actually even heard from some of you, and you've really loved it. So we're going to tell you how to save 20% off your order, not just 10, not just the usual 10, 20% off for CultCast listeners this month, a little later in the show, so stick around. Guys, before we begin, I also want to make a quick announcement. For those of you that were listening last week, you heard me say that we're going to be broadcasting an interview that I did with professional motion graphics professional and editing professional Mike Gaines. He works for Sony. He was the editor on the Totally Rad Show, really super popular video podcast. I did an interview with him. We're going to be broadcasting at the end of this show, so stay tuned. At the very end, we're going to do it just like we normally do, and then we're going to go right into CultCast second hour with Mike. We're going to talk about all sorts of great stuff. The best software for creating video projects for your for your indie projects, for your Kickstarter videos, what hardware you should be using, the kind of computer gear you should be using. And plus, Mike is just an all-around great guy. I really like him a lot. I think you guys are going to enjoy that conversation. But let's start with the big news. Fellows, we finally have word from Apple. I wish I would have done this. I was going to send out a tweet on Monday night that said, expect to hear from Apple tomorrow. I didn't. We did on Tuesday, September 10th event, and they're going to be doing, I mean, iPhones, I guess. That's what we're going to be talking about this show. We got a fun spotted invitation that just said this should brighten up everyone's day. I came right out and just said I think that means they're going to be releasing the iDot. I don't know what it's going to do. Speculation here. I think it's going to be Apple's first entry into the hacky sack market because I know that's really big among
horrible
the youth.
Joke.
They're going to call it the iSack.
iSack. I thought you said it was the
iDot. It used to be
at
SoundCloud.
Well, yeah, they're going to call it one or the other. They'll probably go with iDot, okay. But you know, it's impossible to say. It could be the iSack. But you know, what do you think, Buster? What do you think we're getting on September 10th?
I'm going to say iPhones. Probably.
Well, that's obvious. Definitely, yeah. Getting that. I was thinking that the iSack was going to be the one more thing.
Oh, no.
One more thing, y'all.
They don't do one more thing anymore.
How do you know? Maybe Tim Cook's going to bring it back. It's his company. He does what he wants.
No, that was Steve's
thing.
Well,
like, yeah. It's sacrosanct. Plus, Cookie couldn't pull it off.
That's true.
I bet you he could.
One more time.
Hey, y'all, before we wrap up, hold on now. Get back in your seats. Got a special surprise for y'all. I got one more thing. He's just whispering in the mic. Everyone's looking around all confused.
Gosh.
So, yes. What's that, Leonard?
I wish it was like that.
I hope that's exactly how it goes down. So iPhones for sure.
Yeah. But Leander, you know, the most interesting wrinkle about the whole thing is like how they pulled it down into Cupertino instead of having it in San Francisco.
Now, you guys were talking about that before the show. Why is that? Why is that so interesting to you?
Please, just means it's not as major an event, you know.
I don't know if it doesn't mean it's not as major of an event.
Yeah, I mean, if it was going to be like a huge, like big new product or something like that, I feel like they would have it at, you know, Yerba Buena or Moscow.
Maybe it's their way of saying that it is more important in a way. Like they're being more selective. The venue is way smaller. It only seats like 150 to 200 people, I think. And you know, they're saying that they have complete control over everything. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that means. I don't think
it's not like they didn't have complete control over everything in the Yerba Buena.
Yeah,
how about the scheduling? You know, they locked that place down for days, for like a week. Yeah. The last one they were there, they were camped out a week before. They have, you know, security on the around, you know, all around every entrance. Cops out. You know, they shut down one of the traffic lanes. And it's a lot more convenient for journalists and TV crews, you know, who are already in the city. You know, Cupertino's a drive down.
Yeah.
This kind of implies that we're going to see iPhones, obviously. We're going to see the iPhone 5S. We're going to see the iPhone 5C, but maybe not anything else.
Right.
And exactly. Then that stuff is going to be at Yerba Buena in October. That's my prediction.
Right, yeah. I think that sounds about right. You know, it'll probably just be iPhones and, you know, the release date of iOS 7.
Oh, yeah. They'll definitely go over iOS 7 quite a bit because even though, like, we treated WWDC as, like, a media event, it really wasn't to Apple. Like, it wasn't like a – they weren't addressing – I mean, they were in a sense, but that was a developer audience, and now they're going to be kind of pitching iOS 7 to the world, kind of like this is our finished product because it's matured a little bit over the summer, so it's going to be different looking. And so they're going to be definitely going through iOS 7 again, going through the tentpole features and all of that. And I'm guessing that would take a good chunk of the keynote.
I think you're right, Alex. I want to come back to talking about iPhones, but can we continue this conversation about iOS 7 for just a sec? Because I heard a really interesting piece on NPR about iOS 7. Because Apple is about to do something that no tech company has ever done around operating systems. And that is, you know, most people that use iOS devices upgrade quickly. And as of June, according to Chiquita, which is an analyst firm, 92.7% of iPhone owners were using iOS 6, right? So that's pretty much everyone, or mostly everyone. And Apple, with iOS 6, used a lot of metaphors, a lot of skeuomorphs to help people understand how to use the iPhone, right? Because you're interacting with this digital product and you need references to the real world to know how to use it. So the education was built in to using the product, but now they're kind of abandoning, I guess, the master metaphor of the software, and they're doing something radically different. And unlike, I think, any time before in the past, they're going to release this software, which is drastically different than anything they've ever had before. And 500 million people are going to update. I mean, probably within, total guess, what would you guys say, a month or two? I mean, guys like us update right away. They're going to be changing. Everyone's device is going to become new, you know, overnight. Yeah.
That really is, like, in a way, that is the real launch of the month. Like, mm-hmm. That's the iOS 7 is the real event because it's on such a wider scale than new iPhone hardware. And it's the most, like you said, the most radical thing Apple's ever done. I totally agree with that.
Are you guys going to be upgrading to the 5S? Is anyone planning to do that? You guys are probably actually all planning to do that.
Possibly.
I've thought about it.
My iPhone 3G.
Is that what you're on right now? It sounds like it.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna upgrade.
Really? I've got my iPhone 5 is unlocked. I bought it like off contract, so it's not like I'm tied down. But I don't know if it has the fingerprint sensor. That might convince me to upgrade.
Really?
Yeah, it's just kind of, you know,
just,
I mean,
to play
also
with
for
it?
The, yeah, just to play with it. I mean, also for what I do, I mean, it would make sense to have the newest thing.
Right, yeah.
So.
For you, yeah, it does. Yeah. But I mean, I don't feel like a fingerprint sensor is going to be a sell to me as a consumer because I feel like it'll probably be like Passbook. You'll play with it a couple times and then not use it until...
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if it's integrated right into the unlock screen and you don't have to slide to unlock, you just put your...
I'm not sure it's going to be used for sliding to unlock or unlocking the device all the time as well, though. Is it?
I don't know. That sounds like the most practical implementation.
Just for unlocking your device. Other people were talking about it being used for payments as well. More for
obviously,
you don't have to put in your payment card every time.
Well, yeah, that obviously sounds like a, like if it matured, that would be that. But you think that will do that out of the gate? I mean,
well, I personally just don't care to have like a fingerprint sensor to lock my device because I don't know.
Do you keep your device locked, Buster?
No, I never have. Like,
oh, you don't? Okay.
Or anything. So for me, that's the thing. I don't think it's that cool.
With a fingerprint sensor, you wouldn't have to. I mean, it kind of adds a layer of security.
Yeah, it would just always be locked.
Yeah.
Unless you touched it.
Your girlfriend can't, like, read your text messages anymore and stuff like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's why they're implementing it.
You won, Alex. You won.
Because I do keep my phone locked, and I always have to enter that four-digit code. First world problems. But that's annoying, you know, when you're using your phone, you're like, oh, I got to press four buttons to make this thing start working again. But it is nice to keep it locked. I mean, what if it gets stolen?
If it gets stolen, then I would just
go knucklehead doesn't
find my iPhone and lock it and then berate them.
I can't believe that Leander just called you a knucklehead on this podcast.
Leander called me a knucklehead?
He just basically just called you a knucklehead. I don't know if you're going to put up with that. I wouldn't. You got a job in San Francisco.
Punch me through the microphone. Or save it for CES, right?
Yeah, right. No, we're all so jovial for CES. I miss it. I'm going to start growing my CES stash again. That's going to be exciting. I can't wait to have that thing back.
No, go ahead, Leander.
So the highlight was seeing that picture of that pirate we ran into in the middle of the night.
I was looking at that picture the other day.
I totally forgot about that.
He was like one of the performers from what's the name of the casino?
Right,
Treasure Island. Yeah.
Treasure Island. We ran into him drunk in some alley, and he let me hold his sword. I'm not being euphemistic in my description here. It was actually
a
sword.
Occurred to me that he probably worked at Treasure Island.
That just occurred to me.
Out, I mean,
right. He's just some guy dressed as a pirate walking around Vegas. With his sword.
I think he had his picture taken with tourists on the strip.
Right, yeah.
Oh, you might be right.
Too.
But I think he was a bit too...
he was,
you know,
pretty nasty.
Yeah, he was like a street pirate for sure. He wasn't like a nice casino.
He was a pretty dirty fella.
Yeah, he was. He was indeed. Hey, guys. We need to take a quick break so I can tell people more about Squarespace and how to save 20% off their order this time around. But when we get back, I want to give you a bold prediction for iPhone 5S and iPhone 5C. It's going to be bold. Just wait. Bold. And then also, we're going to be talking about Microsoft buying Nokia. I want to make sure I say that right. Samsung has released a smartwatch. This is hot off the press. We're going to talk about how good or not good that is.
Also, the second Apple event in September.
Oh, yes. The secret second event. I forgot about that. So stick with us, everyone. There's going to be one more things coming up, y'all. But we'll be
right back.
G'day, blokes. It's your old pal, Efron, here. Hey, so if you guys have been thinking about putting up a website, if you're a photographer or if you're an artist, maybe you're trying to put up an e-commerce site, maybe you just want a blog, this is the perfect time to try Squarespace. They're the folks that have everything you need to build a professional website that'll look great on any device, and you won't have to touch any code at all. Yes, sir, the amazing thing about Squarespace is their beautiful templates they give you. You just choose the one that you want to use, customize the look, color scheme, layout, out and feel those templates, all with Squarespace's intuitive WYSIWYG editors. And within mere moments, you'll have a website up and running. But the best part is after you choose your design and add your images, Squarespace has a bunch of magic behind the scenes and will scale your website to look great on any device that visits. iPad, iPhone, MacBook Pro, even a PC. your site's going to look great to everybody. And of course, you're going to want to integrate your social media, which Squarespace does seamlessly. They also feature beautiful image galleries that photographers and artists will love. You really need to check out Squarespace to see what I mean, and it couldn't be easier. Just head on over to squarespace.com/cultcast. Sign up for a free trial. They don't need your credit card number. You're going to give them your email address. You'll be up and running in no time. Play around with it, and if you decide that you like it, you can now save 20% off your order. That's for this month only for CultCast listeners. Just enter the code CultCast9, that's the number 9, at checkout, and Squarespace is going to give you 20% off a month of service, 6 months of service, a year of service. Whatever you buy, you're going to get 20% off. So don't wait. This offer will expire before you know it. Head on over to squarespace.com/CultCast. Get signed up for your free trial. And I definitely want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring the show, and I want to thank you, our listeners, for supporting our sponsors. Let's get back to the show, y'all. And we're back! Welcome back to the CultCast, everyone. Hey, so let's just dive right back in. I wanted to talk about my bold prediction for the iPhone. You guys might poo-poo me, but here's what I think. Now that Apple's delineating with two different iPhone models, right? They're going to have the S series and the 5 and the C series. We don't know what they're going to call the 5C yet. So they're going to have two different models. I think it's time. And if this doesn't end up being true, then it's a great suggestion for Tim Cook. I'm going to email it to him, and I'm going to mark it as urgent so that he actually sees it. I think it guarantees people read your emails when you click the exclamation point. Absolutely. Yeah. When they release, I think that Apple is going to move from the memory model of 16, 32, 64 to 32, 64, 128 for the S models, or I guess the 5, 5S models. And then for the 5C models, we're going to see 16, 32, 64. And then the iPhone 5 is going away because that's basically going to be turned into the 5C.
Are these your own predictions?
These are my own predictions. There have been some rumors about the fact that Apple's going to be, from an analyst, was it from KGI Securities, Ming Kuo? Is that his name? He said that he thought Apple was going to be releasing a model with 128 gigabytes. I don't think they're going to do 16, 32, 64, 128. I don't think that makes sense. Because historically speaking, there's a lower-end model, right, with the lower memory, and then the one with three options.
I mean, that I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. That, like, part of the allure of the iPhone 5S, the luxury iPhone, is that it has more storage. Right.
Yeah, there have been a lot of rumors about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Can I make a prediction?
Please.
As well?
Yeah.
I think gold won't be the only color edition for the 5S.
We'll get a fourth
steel/graphite color.
Isn't that kind of what the black looks like now, though?
No,
what I think, man, is after some years, the black really does look like that graphite stuff.
It's pretty obviously lighter. Like, if you look at pictures of the leaks compared to the current one for the iPhone 5, which is called, Apple calls it Slate. Slate is way darker than graphite. And it's kind of actually, it's interesting because when the iPhone 5 parts were leaking last year before the event, they looked exactly like this steel color that's being leaked for the 5S. So maybe this is a color Apple wanted to do last year and then shelved, and is deciding to break it out this year. Because think about it, guys. Isn't it kind of awkward for Apple to just release a champagne color as a third color, and that's it?
I think it's very weird.
Isn't that very weird?
Yeah.
So, not the whole just them doing a gold one is kind of odd. But
yeah, they could easily go, we have two new colors, you know, steel and or graphite and champagne, and then move on. And it's not as awkward as
champagne.
Like, champagne.
Champagne. I hate those color names, though. I'll be honest. Like,
who knows what it's going to be called?
Like,
don't they usually release colors in fives? New colors in fives, like the iMac and the iPod Nanos, and
I don't know.
I don't know about
the iMac. But they released a ton of different, more than just five, though.
Well, over the course of the product's life, but
right.
Yeah, when they first went color, it was like five new colors, and I think that was true of the iPod Mini when they went colored, and the iPod Nanos when they went colored.
Yeah,
I think it's a purple, though.
There's,
I just doubt it's like a firm rule that they'll do five colors, you know, that they would you know, feel obligated to do five colors then.
The only part leaks we've seen is this gold and this steel.
The gold and, yeah, right. Have we seen any white and black part leaks then? What if they just replace white and black with champagne and steel?
Oh, no. I don't think they'll do that.
Would that be horrible?
That would be terrible. I would buy the 5C. I would buy the 5C.
I'm thinking about the I guess if the 5C doesn't have as good a camera as the 5S, I wouldn't buy it. But I'm thinking.
I'm imagining Tim Cook on stage holding up a glass of champagne.
Cheers.
Ooh, this is tasty, y'all.
Tasty, y'all.
Cheers.
After doubling down on secrecy, I would like to introduce the tastiest, classiest iPhone to date.
Oh, excuse me.
It's bubbly.
It's so bubbly in my mouth. You made me totally lose my train of thought. iPhone 5C. So we're thinking 4 or 5 colors. Leander, it sounds like you're thinking 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely fine.
The iPhone 5C will be cool for those upgrading from a 4S because it kind of gives you a lot of choice.
It's supposed to be exactly like the iPhone 5.
I mean, they're basically stuffing an iPhone 5 into a plastic case and calling it the 5 or whatever they end up calling it.
But it's going to be easier. It's going to be easier for them to make, which is going to allow them to offer it at a cheaper price because those parts have already been in circulation for a while.
Yeah. Plus, there's no anodizing. There's no expensive aluminum. It's just a plastic case.
And I think the 5C brings us to Apple's second event.
Aha! So, Alex, why don't you tell us about the secret second event?
Yeah, well, today actually it was reported that Apple, after issuing invites for a September 10th event in the U.S., issued invites for an event in China on the 11th in Beijing. And it's the first time that I can think of. I don't know, Leander, if Contessa's, if it isn't true, but I can't recall when Apple has done anything like this, like have a big media event in the U.S. and then do another one right up against it in another country.
I think they've had like limited events in Europe and
well,
the UK.
I know they live stream to London and for the London journalists.
And usually it's like kind of live streaming. Sometimes I think because of the time difference. They have a show and tell, that kind of thing. But,
but this from the way they're pitching it, is a totally different. This is its own deal, which.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, and
it's
so the rumor
is, and it's got to be.
Well, the rumor is the China Mobile partnership, right? And China Mobile is the biggest carrier in the world. They have like 700 million subscribers in China alone, and Apple's been trying to get a deal with them for since the iPhone came out. And there's been rumors that it's finally going to happen this fall. And so that in and of itself, I think, would warrant an event in China. But then also they're coinciding, you know, we're debuting this iPhone 5C at a cheap, at a cheap, affordable price, undercut the competition in the area, and say we also were on China Mobile now, which is going to be huge for Apple's bottom line. Because it's a whole other market.
You think Tim Cook will fly out there?
I don't know. Would he be?
He's going to be there in a kimono. Oh, that's Japanese. I apologize.
I don't know.
He's going to be in the full gear. He's going to be selling the image. Apple loves China.
Yeah, right. He'll have a little.
I can see some lesser known Apple execs being on stage. You know, like
I can see Tim Cook doing it. He visits you at the China Mobile.
But the problem is, I mean, he can't be. I don't think he would make it, would he? Well, I guess they have private jets, so I guess he could.
Yeah, he hops on his private plane.
You're right.
I guess he could. But
what about the time delay?
Yeah, and what about why not the operations guy, the guy that replaced Tim Cook, like Jeff Williams or somebody that's involved in China already quite a bit.
He would be dissing the Chinese.
Tim Cook's the most visible person over there for Apple's. Yeah. And I feel like the best thing would be for him to present it too, because it would show that Apple's really serious, you know.
Right. I guess. Exactly. And this is why they're doing the 5C in the first place. It's for this deal, this market. Yeah. It's hugely important to them. This is why Android's got like 80% share, because they're selling all those cheap shoddy Android, in emerging markets. And I mean, this is their answer to it. This is like a huge deal for them. This is where all the growth is going to come from.
Can I just point out the fact that if Apple really succeeds in China, they're going to make a fortune, right? And so will Tim Cook. So from here on out, I believe that we should refer to him as the fortune cookie.
The fortune cookie. There's the show title. That is beautiful.
It just occurred to me. He's no longer the cookie. He's the fortune cookie.
I've not seen that anywhere on the internet.
I've coined it here. Don't try to steal it from me, Mark Gurman. don't take it. It's mine. Hey, we should probably move on, but I do want to mention, and we should have mentioned this at the top of the show. We're going to do a special Cultcast next week on Tuesday. We're going to try and get it out that night. We're going to be recording right after the event, which is, 10 a.m. on Tuesday. We're going to be joined by Adam Christensen from the MattCast. You guys all seem to really like him a lot. So he's going to be joining us, and we're going to be covering everything from the event. So you can have it right away. You won't have to wait till, I guess, Thursday to get the show. So make sure you keep an eye out for that, so people actually download it and not wait till Thursday and be like, oh, this is so old. Why do they wait till Thursday? We don't want to wait till Thursday. We want to get it out to you right away. Hey, guys, let's talk about... Did you just tweet that, Alex?
Yeah.
That's funny. Let's talk about Microsoft buying Nokia. Sorry, Nokia. My bad. Alex, I know you said you wanted to talk about this. I thought this was really interesting. What I think interesting about this is the fact that Microsoft in the last 2 months has said they want to move from being a software company to being a device and services company, which is essentially what Apple is. And here they go. I mean, they're off to the races. They're buying Nokia. What did they pay? $7.2 billion for the company?
Well, they are basically buying Nokia, but they're buying their hardware
division.
And they're taking Stephen Elop, which was the CEO, and he's becoming head of Microsoft's hardware division. So,
oh, he is. I heard there was a rumor that he was going to be the CEO of Microsoft.
Well, yeah, that's the idea, right? Is that he's being groomed to replace Ballmer.
But see, is that a good idea? I mean, he can't even run his own company successfully.
See, I kind of agree with that. Airphone.
Well, yeah. What I think should have happened is Nokia make Android phones running their hardware, because they know how to make great hardware. Mm-hmm. And it's the Microsoft part is what screws it up. The Windows phone is what screws the whole thing up. I mean, Nokia was doing great until Microsoft came along.
Right. Yeah. They had, I was reading the other day, they had like 30% of the market. And now they have 5%.
Well, also a lot of that is just like the legacy Symbian stuff, right? That's been phasing
Plus
out slowly.
Smartphones replacing dumb phones, and Nokia was selling, you know, tons of dumb phones.
Right. I've heard that Nokia bet on Windows, right? Because their own OS wasn't doing well, just like BlackBerry. And it didn't pan out for them. They weren't making any money. They were getting close to bankruptcy. And Microsoft had no choice but to buy them because their phones are the ones that are selling. I mean, what is it? The Lumia 920 or something is the most popular Windows phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if selling 100 Windows phones warrants a $7 billion buyout.
Yeah, but I mean, Microsoft would have totally lost all of their popular Windows hardware phones if Nokia went out of business. So I was hearing that they kind of had to buy them if they wanted to stay in the game. I guess, for me, I kind of wonder if this – we'll see going forward if this was a good decision for Microsoft.
I don't know. BlackBerry – it's just everybody –
it seemed like Microsoft would eventually be making its own cell phone eventually. So
– yeah.
But I felt like Nokia should have been making Android phones too. So it's kind of a bummer to see that.
I agree with you. That seemed like it – I mean, they probably weren't able to – per their contract with Microsoft to be like the exclusive Microsoft phone or something, because Microsoft probably gave them tons of money, you know, to market their stuff and everything. So,
Well, Stephen Elop said when they were considering, you know, moving to Microsoft, that they also considered making Android phones, but they were basically scared that Samsung would just wipe them out, like Samsung's done to HTC. So that's why they did the Windows phone deal instead.
Interesting. It is very fascinating to me that Apple came in and basically just destroyed all the previous you know, popular phone manufacturers.
Oh, yeah. HTC, Sony, Motorola.
Well, BlackBerry is going to be, wants to be sold by November now.
Really?
I mean, the board just put themselves up for sale. I mean, like all of the big, you know, legacy phone providers that were, I mean, like BlackBerry, like invented the smartphone basically. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's sad.
I don't know about that. Didn't Windows invent the smartphone?
Well, maybe invent's not the right word. Popularized.
Yeah, I mean, the BlackBerry, you know.
I mean, I had a BlackBerry before I had
actually
iPhone.
Danger. Wasn't it Danger when they one of the first ones?
Danger.
They were an Apple spin-off.
Oh, weren't those the ones that made the Sidekick?
Yeah, right.
I had a friend that had one of those. He was like 40-something. I was like, I don't think you're the demo here.
This Microsoft Nokia thing reminds me a lot of Google buying Motorola, except Motorola's not as big as Nokia, but still, it's kind of got that same feel to it. You've got a software maker that desperately needs tighter integration with hardware, so they buy the hardware maker.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because like 10 years ago, I mean, no one wanted to be in Apple's shoes. It was like, the perceived wisdom was that it was better to make your, you know, to get hardware companies to compete and to license your software. I mean, do you remember people were talking about licensing, you know, not just the Mac OS, but iTunes and the iPod? The people said the iPod was going to be doomed because Apple wouldn't license it out or open up the ecosystem to other hardware partners. And now, you know, Dell's in trouble, Gateway's gone, you know, HP. the whole thing has been completely rewritten. And now it's, you know, like you say, the phone market too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Microsoft's got no choice. I mean, they have to, you know, they have to emulate Apple, don't they?
Yeah, and it's really strange that they are.
Well, they didn't have any other hardware partners to upset. I'm sure they would have done this, you know, I mean, the problem with Google buying Motorola was, you know, they have to play nice with Samsung, right? They didn't want to play favorites.
Yeah. And Samsung makes some Windows phones, but, you know, it's like a drop in the bucket.
Samsung does everything, though.
Yeah.
They would make Apple devices if they could.
Yeah.
Have you seen, they're trying to.
Aren't
they pretty nice? You know, aren't they? Isn't the hardware and the software pretty good?
I think the hardware is good. The hardware
Buster's
is good.
Buster's got an S4. He likes it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And isn't the software any good, Buster?
Yeah, I mean, if Samsung wouldn't put like their skins on top of it, like I wish that you could just have stock Android on the S4 Active that I have. But other than that, the software.
That's what the hands on.
I was talking about Nokia.
Oh, you're talking about
Nokia.
Nokia. I have a buddy who really loves Windows Phone. But every time I talk to him, he cries that, you know, there's no apps. Like, you know, he can't post to Instagram. He can just look at other people's pictures through third-party apps, you know. Like, nothing for you on that phone platform, you know.
No.
You know, Microsoft used to be great. I mean, their strength was developer relations, right? I mean, they used to give a lot of money to companies to do that kind of thing. I mean, why aren't they paying people to make, you know,
they are
software.
They
I think
are
they're trying to, but yeah. They just can't convince developers that it's worth the time to be investing in a third platform that has, you know, 5% of the market share. It's just not worth it to developers to even put in their resources for it because it's not going to grow their company by putting it on Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft can't afford to pay everyone, right? They eventually need a natural, organic marketplace to, you know, start happening. And to Buster's point, I mean, why would you – if you can make an iOS app that is going to have, you know, 500 million people out there that could use your app as opposed to Windows, which might – I don't even know what the number is, obviously much,
much
lower. 2 million. 2 million. It's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Do you think Microsoft could? I mean, they could, you know, they could pour a lot of money into this. They could say, you know, I mean, one of the things they could do to differentiate with that every app is free. You know, they could pay developers instead of getting consumers to pay for it.
Yeah.
They could say we have an app store, but everything's free. You know, and then they pay.
But wait a second! I thought Microsoft was a business.
Yeah.
why would they just start giving all this stuff away?
Microsoft would be making money off of the hardware and nothing off of the software, kind of like Apple. You know, doesn't make
a ton. Like Google's doing now. Google's giving away the iOS, their OS.
All of their
Google's giving away
software and suites. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but that's because Google does that though because it's first an ad company. And it, well, it's because they, if you're using Google products, they make money whether they charge you for it or not, because that's, they're an information company. They're an ad company. Google can do that because it's uniquely positioned to be able to do that. I don't think Microsoft is.
Also, they're taking a hit now and hoping that they, you know, they're gonna get the moolah later.
Well, I would say if anyone's taking a hit now and wanting the moolah later, it'd be Amazon, right?
Right. Amazon has like the longest, or the, you know, most long term strategy, it seems, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just imagining Scott Forstall getting put in charge of Microsoft and looking at Windows Phone and crying.
I can imagine Forstall being the CEO of Microsoft.
No, there's no way.
It could happen. Come on, don't
cruise. Like, we need to bring back the leather stitching.
If he was interested, I bet you he'd be a
Microsoft
contender.
Would jump on.
Yeah, because they want people who have done that kind of work before.
FU mentality that Steve Jobs had about Apple.
All of a sudden, all the Windows Phone tiles are going to be like Corinthian leather.
No, they're just going to have like a nice glass sheen, or it'd be like a marble. Like a
yeah, Italian marble, probably.
They flip over.
All right, hey, let's wrap up with the, well, I should say, let's wrap this segment up with this because we have Cultcast Second Hour coming up next. So Samsung, hot off the press, releases a smartwatch. I haven't read a ton about this, but it seems to be kind of what the iWatch was rumored to be, and that is a device that, you know, allowed you to read your email, you could have notifications on, you could run apps on, but it doesn't really seem like it does more than, you know, relay information from your Samsung smartphone to your wrist. Again, that might be incorrect. This is just, you know, just announced, so we don't know all the details yet. But do you guys know if it does anything more than just like some basic?
It's got a camera on it, speakers, microphones, so you can even shoot boobies if you want to on it.
Shoot boobies?
But it's, yeah, shoot boobies.
From your wrist.
But it's like, it's $299. There's like Pocket made an app for it, so you can read news on your.
Because everyone wants to read news.
See,
on their
this is what's baffling to me. Why does anyone want to read news or use apps or do any of that stuff on their wrist when they have a big, beautiful screen in their pocket to do all those things? It seems like this is going to be. I think it's going to be DOA. I don't think anyone's going to buy this
Definitely.
Thing.
Definitely. Oh,
like
think
the Sony smartwatch that came out last year.
Yeah. I mean, I think Samsung is trying to beat Apple to market, but device is going to be way, way, way bigger.
Is just like what happened with the tablets, though, right? Like HP and like all these companies were putting out all these crap tablets right before the iPad because everyone knew the iPad was coming. Mm-hmm. And then Apple released the iPad and they blew everyone away. And now, you know, 4 years later, 3 years later, everyone's still trying to catch up.
I just love seeing like what other people think Apple might try. Like you see Samsung and they just kind of throw ideas out until Apple actually comes to the market with an idea and shows the other companies how to actually go to market with like a smartwatch so it doesn't suck. So it'll only take them like a year to catch up, though, is the sad thing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I mean, they're fast followers, right? Well, this is it doesn't even connect to the Galaxy Note, which seems crazy.
I think it does, actually, doesn't it? Or is it going to in a future update, I thought they said?
Well, they said it's coming.
S4, yeah, the S3, coming. And the Galaxy Note 2 are in the works.
Well, all the hands-on reports about this thing from today were saying that the software is super clunky. I mean, we were talking about poor battery life.
I'm reading some stuff right now.
Yeah, so you'd have to recharge it every night.
Who's
going to want to charge their watch every day? I mean,
What I feel like the iWatch would have to have like a week battery life or at least 5 days or something, you know, because I never want to take jewelry off and stuff like that and put it on every day.
Right.
Right. No one's going to take it off every day. There's no way.
Strangely, I think that that Samsung CEO J.K. Shin was right. He said, I believe it will become a new fashion icon around the world. I think he's right. I think people who are into fashion will buy this, but no one else.
Are you kidding me? It looks hideous.
People that are into fashion will not buy
it. Will I Am is going to be wearing one of these.
Look at the clock faces are even ugly, man. Like they didn't even make nice clock faces.
I don't think it looks that bad.
It looks like a piece of construction equipment.
Yeah, it's just
I'm looking at, I don't know what you guys have seen. I'm looking at some press shot and they don't look that bad. I wouldn't wear one, but this doesn't look like a, it looks like it has a nipple on the top. What is that? Oh, it's the camera.
The camera.
Yeah. It's got full of boobies on it.
Boobies.
Yeah. That'd be cool if they put like an alcohol sensor on it. You could blow into the little nipple and it would tell you if you were legally able to drive. That would actually be useful. This thing is just confusing to me. I don't understand what the point of this is. This is exactly one of those products that they tried to be first to market with, but it's half-baked. It looks good, but I don't understand any of the functionality. By the way, if anyone out there is listening and you're punching yourself in the face being like, Airfon's an idiot, tweet us, please. Tell us that you want a Samsung watch and why, because I would be really curious to hear.
It's got 60 applications. They've thrown every single idea at this they can think of, and they really haven't thought out a really good use case for it. I mean, one of the things is I want people to talk into it, like a Dick Tracy watch. I mean, that is absolutely absurd. No one is going to do that.
I was thinking the same thing. Who's going to do that? Not to mention the fact that you're not going to be able to hear the people talking to you because of some tiny, tinny speaker on the watch. And, normally when you're trying to hear a conversation, you put something to your ear or in your ear, right, so you can actually hear the other person. I don't understand. I think you're absolutely right, Leander. I feel like they don't have, a solid use case for this. So they just threw a bunch of stuff at it, and they're like, hopefully this is useful to some people.
Right, exactly. The Apple device will be the exact opposite. What they'll have done is they'll have boiled it down. The original iPod, it'll do one thing and one thing well. It'll have a very, very clear use case, and then maybe they'll open it up over time and expand its capabilities.
Yeah.
I think the best guess is it's going to be a health tracker, right?
Well, they said this thing comes with a pedometer.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but
Apple's working on more advanced stuff, like reading
glucose,
you know,
levels, stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And a camera-based pulse reader, and it'll help with a whole bunch of different health functions. I mean, maybe it'll probably be a fairly sophisticated device.
Yeah, an Apple hired.
But, the clear function will be it's like take care of your health with this thing.
Right. Apple hired the guy who made the Nike Fuel Band. So,
Jay Blahnik.
Yeah, that's obviously something they're focusing on. And Tim Cook is a member of Nike's board. A lot of the Apple execs wear Nike Fuel Bands in public.
Including Bob Mansfeld.
Well, hey, you got to start somewhere.
I saw a picture of him wearing one. Oh, boy. Okay, let's just see. I'm just going to be quiet. Never mind. I retract that statement. Yeah, you're right. Hey, you got to start somewhere, right? Maybe he's trying to get in shape. Good for him.
Cutting off the circulation to his hand. Probably
okay, I think we should probably wrap it up there. And what do you guys think? So that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Make sure you stay tuned in just a moment for Cultcast Second Hour, my interview with Mike Gaines. You're really going to enjoy it, I think. Hey, if you want to follow us on Twitter, tell us what you think of Samsung's new smartwatch and whether you'll be buying one along with Will I Am. I'm at Airfon, Alex is Alex E. Heath, Buster's BST3R, and of course Leander Caney is L. Almost with L. Caney. L. Caney. I can't speak. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay tuned for Cultcast Second Hour coming up next, and we'll see you guys next time, which is going to be in just a moment.
Kahani.
Kahani. Gosh, I have way too many names in my head right now.
Kahani Elijah.
All right. Hey, everyone. I am here with Mike Gaines, video editor extraordinaire, visual effects designer. Is that a term that is accurate, Mike?
Visual effects artist.
Visual effects artist.
Yeah.
Okay. And Mike, as you know, I kind of found you through a show or a podcast called Totally Rad Show. Oh. And did you know that?
I didn't know that. What's this show called? What is it again? I've never heard of it.
It's one that you've worked on for several years, or at least you did. Yeah.
That's right.
I'm surprised that you forgot about it.
I almost forgot. Almost forgot. It's been a while, actually.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't actually been that long. What, like a year?
Almost a year. Almost a year.
You should see a doctor about that memory condition.
Yes.
But I'm excited to have you on. We had Jeff on, and I don't know if you heard that show, but it was great.
I did. Yeah.
And Jeff was like, you should talk to Mike. And I was like, I would love to talk to Mike, because a lot of the questions that we got or that we've received while doing our show are about how to use Mac gear to record and produce, you know, video and that type of thing.
Right.
And the Totally Rad Show was amazing. It was amazing. I don't think that people... Not that they didn't give you credit, but I think probably a lot of the people that saw the show and saw, you know, the three personalities, Jeff, Mike, Dan on there. They saw them, but they didn't realize that your personality was really infused in that show, because you were doing all the editing and the visual effects and stuff. And I was always thoroughly impressed by the visual effects in that show.
Well, there's, thank you.
I mean, just the, we're going buzzy. Hey everyone, we're back. Sorry, we had a little technical glitch there, and you might notice that Mike's audio has changed a little bit, but
just a little bit.
It still sounds really good.
Well, because I'm using an iPhone. That's why.
Yeah.
Before this, I was using the most professional equipment I had, and it was not working. But you know what? An iPhone it is.
It sounded like maybe you're on an Android device. That's what I thought was happening.
Oh, okay. That's probably what happened.
Low jab. It's a low jab. Anyway, I was complimenting you profusely.
Yes, continue with that, please.
Okay. We'll continue with that for the next 10 minutes and then actually get into something of substance. Yeah. So basically, I was just saying, huge fan of Totally Rad Show. And for anyone that hasn't watched it, you guys, with not a lot of... really expensive gear or professional gear, created a very professional show, and it was shot in front of a green screen. And as the guys were talking about movies and video games and all the great stuff that they talked about, you were, you know, really infusing your personality into the show by having things fly by and creating graphics and stuff. Can I just ask you, when you were doing the production of that, what did your gear look like, and what kind of applications were you using to kind of create that whole environment, environment?
We were pretty bare bones when it came to the production of it. I mean, literally all we used was the green screen, and for a little while we used a Sony HD camera for some time, and then I got the 5D Mark II. And we started using that. The problem with that is that we could only shoot in like 12 minutes in chunks.
Yeah, right.
So our reviews got a little shorter because of that. And
is that why the show format went from 60 minutes to 12?
Yeah, exactly. Just because of the 5D Mark II. No, but once that happened, then finally they came out with an update for the firmware that you could go up to like 30 minutes, I think. So that was a short-lived restriction. But we would shoot with the 5D and shoot separate and record the audio separately on house microphones, and we had a little mixer, and then that all was recorded into a Zoom 4HN, or H4N, whatever it is, to record the audio separately, because with the limitations of the Mark II, you couldn't really monitor audio as you were recording it. So I was like, well, that's kind of stupid. So so you have to kind of have this dual system thing. So we did that for a long time until the Mark III came out, and then I got that, and you can plug a headphone into that, and it's got audio meters, and that made everything really
So are you
easy.
Not using your Zoom H4N any longer?
No, not really. Only in special cases where I want to have either the onboard microphone or I have a little Rode Video Mic Pro, I think is what it is. Mm-hmm. plug that into the camera, and if I don't have a little mixer with me, then I'll bring the Zoom to record the wireless mic separately. But it's kind of cumbersome. It's like, you know, you have to make sure you're recording on the Zoom as well, and it's just one extra step. So the Mark III really kind of alleviated a lot of those problems for us, and kind of I was able to reduce all the gear that we had to carry around, and it literally was just the Canon 5D Mark III and then the wireless microphone setup. We also had, you know, we had the usual like lights and we had a teleprompter. We got a teleprompter eventually. For a majority of the show, they didn't use a teleprompter at all.
They were just ad-libbing.
They're just completely ad-libbing. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually all of the show is completely ad-libbed. The only stuff we'd use the teleprompter for were the sponsor segments. So whenever we'd have like ad copy that we'd have to say pretty much exactly the way that the ad people wanted us to say it, then we would put it all in the teleprompter and use the teleprompter for that. But everything else, the reviews and all of that sort of stuff was all ad-libbed. I think we would put like specific details about who directed something or who was in something up on the teleprompter to remind people. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. Yeah. I mean, That was literally it. I think we got a HDTV at one point, so we could so I could monitor things a little better versus the little 3-inch screen on the back of the camera. Mm-hmm. But and we did it all in basically a studio apartment. And at one point we were doing it in Alex's garage,
right?
And then we kind of made our own studio to shoot in. So. That was pretty bare bones as far as the production side of it was concerned. And then for all the post-production stuff, I mainly used Final Cut Pro.
Final Cut Pro 7?
Final Cut Pro 7 for, I would say, the 3 years of the 4 years that I worked on the show. We mm-hmm. used Final Cut Pro 7. And also Motion. I used Motion for all of the graphics and basically all the green screen work, because Motion had a great, or still has a great, green screen keyer in it. Mm-hmm. And unlike After Effects, Motion was able to play back in real time the green screen key. So I could literally sit there and watch the segment as it was going, hear audio and hear everything in real time, and then whenever they mentioned either a movie or some actor or whatever, another video game, I would be able to pause it, drop in the graphic, and then animate it in, and then hit play again, and then be able to watch it in
real time. That was part of the magic of the show, too. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I had never seen done before, especially not in such a low-cost production. You know, to see things when they're talking about things in real time. So they would talk about an actor, they'd talk about a movie, and things, because they were shooting in front of a green screen, would be mm-hmm. happening behind them to illustrate whatever they were talking about.
Right.
Or oftentimes one of my favorite things that you guys would do would be when they were talking about a video game, to actually be playing the video game on the green screen behind
right.
them.
Right.
So yeah. It would fill the whole frame and they would be blocking part of it. Mm-hmm. But you could still see what was happening in the game or in the movie.
Yeah, and that was kind of it was really a construct from before I was even mm-hmm. on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Konchalik, who started the show with Dan, Alex, and Jeff, really kind of created that style, and all the credit goes to him for coming up with that. But really, kind of when I came on, I just wanted to figure out different ways to make it a little more elegant or a little more stylized or mm-hmm. things like that, and to integrate it in the show a little bit more seamlessly, I guess you could say. It was really kind of the fourth character of the show was the graphics that we would add, or, you know, when they're talking about the movie that they're reviewing, you get to see the trailer. I mean, you don't get to hear it, but you at least get to see the trailer that they're the movie that they're talking about. Same with the video game footage too. So, it's just another way to add another level of spice to basically a podcast shot on video. And that's, I think, what kind of gave it its unique quality, because not a whole lot of other podcasts, other video podcasts were doing this quite the same level of stuff graphically that we were doing. And we were able to do it on such a kind of a short budget and short turnaround and pretty good quality. So I think that's what made us unique. And, like I said, I credit a lot of that to Steve, but gave me the opportunity to be really creative each week in different ways. So it was cool.
How long did it take you to edit the podcast? I know what, and there's, mm-hmm. I should probably say this. We should have said this earlier. So we've talked about Tilly Rad Show on the Cultcast before. We had Jeff on and he talked a little bit about it. So it was originally a 60-minute show, correct?
Right, yeah.
And it was once a week, and then it moved to a daily format, which when it did that, it became much shorter. It was 12 minutes long, and basically you guys would talk about video games and movies and sometimes comic books, television shows, that type of thing.
Right, right.
So when you're editing a 60-minute show and then you're editing a 12-minute show, I mean, how long did it take you to put that show together every week?
It would basically take me we would usually shoot on a Friday, and it would usually take me the rest of the entire weekend to get the show done.
Like
and,
two full eight-hour days type of a thing?
Yeah, about two full eight-hour days. And most of the time was spent to rendering. And I think when I was using Final Cut Pro 7 and Motion, it would take – I would have to render out all of the video overnight because it would be like a 15-hour render, even on like a Mac Pro.
Yeah, so you had some pretty powerful equipment that you're using, right, as far as computer stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I also, in addition to my visual effects business, I would have quite a bit of good equipment, good video card, Mac Pro, the latest Mac Pro and all that. So that definitely helped in creating the show, but it still took a long time. The rendering and the process and all of that still took quite a long time. And that was kind of for the 60-minute show, the weekly show that we did, that was kind of how things went. When we switched to the daily format, that was really – it was more work because instead of three segments each week for an hour, we were really doing five segments each week. And although those seemed – it seemed like in total that was a short – each day you had a shorter show – cumulatively for the week, you had a lot more content. So it was a lot more work for me on the weekends to get everything done. The great thing was is that I could really only need to work on Monday and Tuesday's show, and then on Monday I could pick up and finish the rest of the week. I didn't need to have everything done Sunday night so that it could be out on Monday morning, like it was with the 60 minutes. So, so that kind of it was a little more work, but I was able to spread it out a little bit more when we went to the daily format.
Let's talk about hardware for a moment. So
sure.
I know you edited on Macs. I know you're a huge Apple fan.
Yes.
And that's another one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. So why – maybe the answer to this is really simple, but why edit on Macs? I mean, what's the appeal there versus PC?
I think the ecosystem – the creative ecosystem that Mac is known for and Apple is known for really helps the technical process of creating something. With a PC, and things have changed a little bit just in the past year or two because Adobe has really ramped up all of their software, especially Adobe Premiere, which now is going toe-to-toe with Avid and Final Cut as being a really kind of professional editing system. And that works perfectly fine on Windows and works great on Windows. But a couple of years ago, that really wasn't the case. And you had Final Cut and Avid. And Avid would work on both. It would work on Windows and Mac. But Mac, I think with the use of QuickTime, I think just thinking about the job that I have now in visual effects, we deal with QuickTime all the time because we send QuickTimes to clients. We send them to the post houses. We send ProRes to the post houses for final shots and that sort of thing. And it's harder. It takes a little bit more work to do that on a Windows system than it does on an Apple system. It's baked into an Apple system. That QuickTime architecture. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot more third-party software that can handle QuickTime and process it and do different things to it. So I think that that's kind of how I view things. If Windows was just as easy to use with QuickTime and visual effects software and that sort of thing, I think that I would be perfectly fine working on a Windows machine. It's just, I don't know, something about Apple that makes everything just a touch easier, a little bit more user-friendly, and that's more appealing to creative people who just want to take a picture and edit it really quickly and easily. Not saying that you can't do that on a Windows computer, but Mac just has something about it that makes it a little more appealing, I think.
I agree, and it is kind of hard to pinpoint what that special sauce is.
Yeah. But
it does kind of remind me of the very first time I was using a Mac for a job I had gotten, and I was trying to drag and drop an image to change like an avatar or something. Uh-huh. And I was like, you know, I'll just try this and see if it works. And I did it and it worked.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, the moment where I was like, wow, they have really gone through and thought of all these little things that you're going to try.
Yeah.
And they anticipated those things and made it work so that mm-hmm. when you go to do it, it just works.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of polish I feel like the PC world doesn't get.
Yeah, yeah. I think that a PC user, and I used to be a PC user, I mean, for that's the only thing I used up until maybe like 6 or 7, 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Because I love the PC because I could tinker with it. I could mm-hmm. I could change the registry and make the computer do things that it wasn't supposed to. But there was kind of the groundwork there where you could just do anything you really wanted with it. With a Mac, that is still all there, but it's hidden behind a more user-friendly experience. And I think that that is a more appealing to somebody who's creative than Windows. Like you said, I think they thought of exactly what you said. Like, people are going to want to drag and drop this over there and make it do something. So let's try to figure out how we can build that into it
mm-hmm.
As a native experience. And same thing with the iPhone and the iPad. Things just work the way you think they're going to work. And that's why, you know, you see those videos of grandma who's 85 years old playing with an iPad. She knows exactly what she's doing because Apple has figured out what the easiest, most user-friendly experience is going to be. And I think that trickles around to all of their software, all the iLife software, the GarageBand and iMovie. And then Final Cut, the new Final Cut 10, I think kind of took that and ran with it a little bit too mm-hmm. far. And then and then they kind of were like, oh, crap, we kind of pissed off some people. So here we're going to update it a little bit so that the professionals can use it again. So
okay, well, I wanted to go there, so I'm glad that yes. you took us there
Segway.
First. Segway. Perfect segue. I can tell you're a real pro. So Final Cut 7. Mm-hmm. I used to use, and probably only a smidgen of what it could actually do. But then Final Cut Pro X comes out and yeah. is arguably more user-friendly,
yeah.
But is lacking a lot of professional features. I know a lot of pros were up in arms when the change happened, and it right. kind of felt that it was no longer a professional application.
Right.
What were your thoughts on that switch, and do you use Final Cut Pro X now?
I do use Final Cut X now. I don't think I haven't opened up Final Cut Pro 7 in forever. I don't know the last time I did. But my initial, I mean, when it first came out, I mean, I immediately went to the App Store and bought it. It was mm-hmm. like $300, fine, great, looks great, looks awesome. I'd seen videos, this is perfect. I open it up and then I'm like, okay, cool. I want to open up, okay, I'll pull over this project here from Final Cut 7. Oh, there's no way to open up old projects.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's weird, but there's got to be a way. That's stupid.
Surely they wouldn't release it without some kind of backwards compatibility.
Exactly. And then it just kept kind of being that way. I was like, okay, well, what else does this thing not do that I'm used to Final Cut 7 doing?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out there were a lot of things it couldn't do. Multicam editing. I mean, I couldn't put a dissolve on an audio track, audio clip. I mean, things that just were just so base level editing that were just completely missing. And and yeah, I was like, all right, well, not using that now. Going back to Final Cut Pro 7. And also I started to look at the Adobe Premiere stuff because they had done a recent upgrade when that first Final Cut 10 came out. And I looked at that and I played around with it and it was good. It was great. It was serviceable. But all, like I said, all my projects were in Final Cut 7. I knew how to use it. It worked for me in the past. It still works. So I stuck with Final Cut 7 for a little while. Final Cut 10 kept coming out with a couple of incremental updates. And then finally, it came out with a really big update. And the big update was multicam editing. It had multicam, and they brought over the green screen, like I was talking about earlier, the green screen keyer from Motion, they brought it over into Final Cut.
Wait, so they moved it from that application into Final Cut Pro 10?
Yes, they took the same Final Cut 10 had its own keyer, but they brought over the better keyer that was in Motion over into Final Cut Pro 10. And that kind of got a light bulb went off in my brain about that. They have multicam now, and they have the keyer inside Final Cut.
Multicam, also for those that may not know, it's support for editing multiple cameras at once, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah, so say you shoot like with 10 different cameras, you could put them all in Final Cut and sync them all up, and then you kind of have like a master board of all of your cameras playing at the same time. You can be like, okay, I want to use this camera for here, and do it all kind of in real time. And that was that's a huge thing in Final Cut 7. Wasn't in Final Cut 10 for the longest time until they came out with that update. And the way they did it was amazing, and it was perfect, and it was great. And so I started playing around with it and realized that in Final Cut 10, I could basically cut out Motion completely.
Because
Final Cut 10 and Motion are kind of built on the same framework, and because you can share different your different Motion projects, you can use them in Final Cut, and you can publish them, which allows you to use all of the controls that are in Motion in Final Cut. So you could set up all different types of graphics templates and transition. You can build your own transitions all in Motion and then bring it over to Final Cut and use them as effects or generators and all those sorts of fun things. So it was all kind of built on that underlying architecture. So I was like, well, is there a way I could combine everything and do everything in Final Cut without having to do anything in Motion and cut all of that rendering time that I had? Because basically what I would do is render out 6 camera angles for each segment on the Totally Rad Show. We would shoot with one camera, but we would have different camera angles.
Well, explain the logic behind that. That's something that Jeff said when we had him on and we tried to get more information out of him. He was like, you're talking to the wrong guy. So that was another one of the unique things. So imagine, if you will, there's 3 people. They're sitting in front of a camera talking and they're describing something, and then it pans to one person, and all of a sudden you're on a different angle, and it's just as you said, it felt like you were using a lot of cameras.
Right,
but you obviously were not. How did that whole thing work?
Well, basically, our show was released in 720p throughout the run of the show, basically, and we shot in 1080p. So that gave me the flexibility to scale up the video and create these virtual cameras for close ups and for two shots and without a whole a large loss in quality.
So it's almost like a digital zoom almost.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. It was digitally zooming in, and by making the background a little out of focus, you're giving the illusion that, hey, we're shooting this on a completely different angle with a different camera, and it just allows us for the show to be a little more dynamic. It's not just one cut off, shoot.
Just not one continuous shot, made it much more interesting, obviously, because the shots the camera angles are changing and stuff, keeps your attention. Right. But did you have to blur out the background yourself, or is that? Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the backgrounds they were made by some fans. They would make the backgrounds for every segment, and I would just put that in, and then when I'd make a new camera angle, I'd just put a little defocus on the background, and bam, it looked like it was a completely different camera.
Wow.
But that's what would take so long to render out. I would have to render out each and every angle for each segment every weekend, and that's what would take a long time, because I'd have to do each one separately. But with Final Cut 10, I was able to up all of those different cameras with the multicam feature in Final Cut 10 and the keyer, which can play the key back in real time. I could do everything in Final Cut and then not have to render anything while I was working. And by doing that, I cut almost an entire day out of my editing process.
Wow. That was one of the big features of Final Cut 10, right? Is that kind of like that ability to not have to render and just view stuff in real time?
Yeah, that was a huge thing too, because when we were shooting on the Canon 5D, those files that come out of the can, they're so compressed that Final Cut 7 can't play them back. Mm-hmm. I mean, they play them back, but it stutters and the computer just chokes up on it. You can play them almost natively in Final Cut 10, just as you can with Premiere 2. But and if you want, you can, in the background, it will convert those to ProRes so that it's even easier on your system. But that's all happening in real time. And just that process alone, I wouldn't have to come home and then convert all of my footage to ProRes to use it in Final Cut 7. I could just throw it into Final Cut 10. Boom, it was ready to go. I could start pulling a key off of it, start doing the graphics, everything. And in the background, it was silently converting everything over to ProRes. So, so many different little things that cut the time out of me having to edit that show, especially with the multicam and the keyer that was in there. I was able to almost do, I could do basically on Saturday, I could do two or three episodes worth of the show and have them completely done on Saturday, which was crazy because that wouldn't happen with Final Cut 7. So that's why I stuck with it.
What were you using to create the intros of the shows? The intros looked really professional. And also, you know, like you guys had that segment where you would have people tweet a question and they would answer, and you would have like the screen move around. You'd have graphics coming in from like different parts of the screen. What were you doing to create all that stuff?
All the intros were done in After Effects.
Okay.
I think almost all of them, I would create those in After Effects. And, for a little while, for most of the time, all of those graphics would be created in After Effects and I'd have to bring them over.
Mm-hmm.
When they made updates to Final Cut 10, though, I was able to make templates in Motion and publish those over to Final Cut 10, and all of like the lower third, you know, their name popping up or a website or something that kind of slides in, all of that stuff I could create on the fly in Final Cut because I had created all those elements in Motion. So I wouldn't have to go to After Effects quite as much.
So they were just kind of like, I mean, motion graphic assets that you would just have sitting in Final Cut Pro, and then you just drag and drop them onto the frame?
Yeah, drag and drop them, and since they were motion elements, you could double-click on the text and change the text, and they would automatically update, and without rendering or anything, all done right there in the timeline in Final Cut.
So it sounds like you're very pleased with Final Cut Pro.
I am. I think that they've added a lot of features that, I mean, you still can't really open up an old Final Cut 7 project, mainly because Final Cut 7 used video and audio tracks, and Final Cut 10 doesn't do that. The concept of video and audio tracks is completely gone from Final Cut 10, so it's harder to translate things over. But they did open up kind of the back end of Final Cut 10 in the way that it's all stored in XML. All their projects are XML files, so all these third party companies would come in, and now they have access to all of that back end data and the way that it's saving everything, and it can kind of plant its hooks into Final Cut. And now there's a program that you can just show it your old Final Cut 7 project, and it will convert it into Final Cut 10. So there have been different ways to bridge the divide, I think. And now it's a lot more professional with native Red support and things like that they've really kind of taken their time, but they've made it into a lot more professional product than it was when they first came out with it. If they had said this is an alpha version of Final Cut 10, people would have been a little happier. But they came out right out of the gate saying this is the new Final Cut, it's going to replace Final Cut 7, and that's the mistake that they made.
Well, I mean, it's true. It just took them a year.
It took them a little while. Yeah, it took them a little while, but. But yeah, I love it, and I've cut a lot of things on it. Not just the Totally Rad Show. I've done short films, commercials, all kinds of stuff on it, and it's just as professional, I would say, as cutting something in Premiere or Avid. It's just a different way of editing. They employ a different. Their timeline is a completely different. You know, they have the magnetic timeline, which which Premiere actually just with their latest update has kind of. Embraced a little bit more. They have a feature very similar to the magnetic timeline, but it's just a different way of editing. And once you start learning how it works, I think it's a much faster way of editing and a lot easier to manage. Again, it goes back to that Apple PC thing. Mm-hmm. I think with Final Cut 10, it's a lot more user friendly while still keeping some of the pro ideas of editing. And I think that they blend those two in a very, very good way. And more professional studios are using them, and there are more and more TV shows that are using Final Cut 10.
Really? Yeah, because that was going to be kind of one of my questions. Like, is it a professional tool? I mean, are there studios out there using this? Because I always hear about them using PCs and PC products. So do you feel like it's commercial grade?
I think it's commercial grade to a certain extent. I think in Hollywood, quote unquote, everybody uses Avid. I mean, that's the standard is Avid, and all the post production houses are all based on Avid workflows and all of that. So it would be really hard for Final Cut to kind of come in and say, hey, we're gonna completely change the way you do everything, and then everybody's using Final Cut. I think that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But even if you go on Apple's website, they have a couple of cool case studies on some TV shows and some I think a couple of people who do documentaries talking about their workflow with Final Cut 10 and how it helps them. So it's becoming a little more professional in the eyes of the editing community. Mm-hmm. It still is kind of an uphill battle, though, because they really kind of screwed themselves right out of the gate, I think, with their product. But I'm sticking with it, and we'll continue to use it. I don't know. If I was to edit a feature film on it, I'm not exactly sure I would trust it too much. Just because of the length of something like that, I don't know if it would handle it. I'm not sure.
You think it might choke up and just?
It could.
Really?
I don't know. I've never thrown something that long at it.
Feature, you mean like 2 hours?
Yeah, like a 2 hour thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, and this is the way it's been on Macs for a long time, and in the Apple ecosystem, is that it's really great for independent. Artists and that type of thing. Like if you're going to be doing a documentary, maybe you're doing a Kickstarter video, you can have an SLR, which if you're a videographer, you probably have.
Yeah.
If you have a Mac, you can load up this software, which by the way, we didn't even mention the price was kind of a revolution as well. I mean,
yes.
Was it $200 or $300?
I think it was $300. Yeah.
Because how much does Avid cost? I mean, how much did Final Cut Pro 7 cost?
Exactly.
Right. It was like $1,000.
Exactly. That was a huge, huge thing. It's like I now have for $300, I have access to a great editing system. And until very recently, it was the same thing with Adobe Premiere, which used to cost a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Now you basically rent it from Adobe, and I think that's great. But yeah, a total game changing price. So I mean, for $300, basically to edit the Totally Rad Show and all the stuff that we did with the graphics and everything, all you really needed was Final Cut Pro 10 for $300, and that's it. That's all you needed, and Motion, which was another $50. But
$50.
Yeah, but $50. That's nothing compared to. I mean, Avid still costs over $1,000, I think.
Wow.
So. So yeah, it's more accessible to people. It's like I said, you could download it. You could do all the chroma key stuff that you wanted, all the graphic stuff that you wanted, stuff that looks as professional as any other piece of software, and it only costs you $300. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome. Let me ask you this. I know we have a lot of people that are creative that listen to this show. We have young people listening to this show, young and old alike. If you had to give somebody advice on, they want to get started doing video production in some way, what would be like a bare bones system? And then also following that, what would be like your dream system? I mean, to have, maybe you already have it, but if they had like endless money to spend. So let's start with the first one though. Bare bones.
Bare bones. Well, you know, it sounds weird, but if you have an iPhone, like an iPhone 5.
Wow. I was expecting 4S, you to say that. Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, the quality of the camera on that is really good. The HD camera on that is really good. And there are now programs that Filmic Pro, I think, is one where you can
control. You said it was called Filmic Pro?
Filmic, F-I-L-M-I-C, I think that's what it's called. Anyway, it allows you to control exposure, white balance, all those different settings. You have audio meters, a lot of the really pro settings that you have in like an SLR camera.
And you can control aperture and that type of thing?
Yeah, all of that in the app. Yeah.
Wow, that is cool. Because, you know, that's one of the things when you use an iPhone, you don't get to touch any of that stuff. No. I mean, the iPhone's just doing everything for you.
Exactly. Well, thankfully, there's an app for that. So,
I see what you did there.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you want to get really bare bones with it, you could literally shoot it on your iPhone, and you could edit it on your iPhone with iMovie and put it together pretty well. But if you were to make one step up from that, I would say getting the cheapest Canon DSLR camera, which I've kind of lost track of the numbers that they have now. There's the 60D, and I think they came out with the 70D just recently. Any of those cameras, they're under $1,000. Those are amazing cameras and produce amazing footage. No matter what, how much you spend on a camera, like the Mark III is pretty much the best as far as like, you know, anything under $5,000.
Really, you think so?
I think it is. Wow. I think it is. I think now, especially with the community of hacking going on with Magic Lantern.
Oh my gosh, I'm waiting for them to release their beta firmware for the 5D Mark III.
And being able to shoot in RAW, and they've figured out how to do all of that.
Like the dual ISO stuff too.
Dual ISO increase looks awesome.
Yeah, I have one of those, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that, but
cool.
I'm more of a photographer than a videographer. Excited for that.
And that's the great thing about those SLRs. They take amazing pictures too. So you can
shoot
video and you can take amazing pictures.
They do that as well.
But anyway, so I think that that would be the best type of camera to get if you don't want to use your iPhone. And then for $300, you can get Final Cut and do everything. You can do the graphics. You can do color correction. You can do audio recording, audio manipulation, all of that stuff. It's all built into Final Cut, and that's literally all you would need for a computer.
Yes, there you go.
I think even the latest MacBook Air is completely capable of doing all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it may take a little longer to render things, but I think it's perfectly fine.
But it wouldn't stutter and sputter as you're editing?
I don't think so. I don't think it would. Especially,
I mean, they tout the fact that that Final Cut Pro X works even on a MacBook Air.
Yeah. I think it would be fine. It's just wherever the storage that you're using to store all that video, because the MacBook Air, that has Thunderbolt, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So even if you had like a Thunderbolt drive to store all your video on, you have fast access to that video. That's the only real kind of bottleneck that you'd have when you're using it on a MacBook Air. But I think it's perfectly fine with that. And then the iMacs are amazing. And I think some of the iMacs are even, they benchmark better than the Mac Pro that they have now. So an iMac would be great. And it's all in one and perfect, ready to go. For my ultimate Dream system. We'll have to see what happens with the new Mac Pro.
Well, I was going to ask you about that and what you thought about that as well.
Well, it looks like something that if I put it on my desk, people would throw their trash in it.
Yeah, or so, try to put their cigarettes exactly, on top of.
So that's a little weird, but I kind of dig it. They're trying to change things and, you know, whatever.
How do you feel about the modularity of it? You know, it's like the single, cylinder, and then you plug everything in externally.
Yeah, it's going to be – there are going to be a lot of cables going around, I think. Mm-hmm. But it does give you the opportunity if you just wanted something to a really fast computer to edit on. You don't have to have 5 bays, drive bays, and your own graphics card and all of that. I think it's it's something that you can upgrade pretty easily through the Thunderbolt technology to your heart's content. You could go crazy with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've heard anything about them coming out with their own modular system. Like, are they going to come out with a Thunderbolt PCI Express card chassis or anything like that?
I haven't heard anything about that.
Are they just going to leave that up to third party people? Because I'm not sure.
That kind of seems to be the way Apple's going with a lot of that kind of stuff. Is they make the ports fast, and then they kind of leave it to third parties to create the actual peripherals.
Yeah. So that could become a pricing could become a huge problem for that, because if the Mac Pro itself is like close to $3,000, then
that thing's going to be expensive too, because it has SSDs built in. And SSDs just in and of themselves are not cheap, and Apple charges a premium for them.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it was like $5,000.
But $5,000 for something I can't put a hard drive in it. I have to get an external thing for all of my storage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty nuts. That's expensive. But if it's going to be the fastest Mac you can get, then people are going to pay for it. It'll just be, there'll be some sticker shock, I think, when they total up like, oh, well, I had 4 drives in this computer. Okay, now I have to get an expansion case for that. And I have my own video card, so I have to get like a Thunderbolt to PCI card thing. Okay, well, that's another $1,000 or, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to start getting really expensive to replicate what you had in your Mac Pro. But it offers a lot of upgradability, so hopefully it won't be that bad. I don't know. I think they're going to come out. It's going to come out like the base model is going to be like $1,999 or something. And then you can upgrade it up to like $5,000 maybe.
Yeah, you're probably right. They're also making it a lot smaller. So hopefully the materials costs are going to be much cheaper.
Right.
I mean, who knows? We have no idea. Hopefully there's that rumored, all but confirmed September 10th event coming up.
Yeah.
And hopefully
they talk about that.
Yeah, at least mention it. Maybe tell us how much it's going to cost.
Right. Give us an update on it. Well, they just released the ad for it, so I feel like they're going to make a pretty big push to let everybody know about it.
That's true. They're starting to play them at movies now, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've had a few of the Apple commercials play, before the movies begin.
Interesting.
So...
Well, we shall see.
Yeah. So you're thinking that might be kind of the way you would go. Because, you've been editing on a Mac Pro for years and years.
Right.
And those have always really done it for you, right? So for you, you're kind of like, well, if I want to continue in this, then let's see what Apple's vision is for the future for this machine.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And at work for my visual effects work, I use a Mac Pro too, because I use After Effects for most of the visual effects stuff. And After Effects will use every core that you have in a system, and those Mac Pros, it's hard to replicate that in a PC to have 12 core processor and crazy expandability within that, and After Effects eats it up like nobody's business. So we'll see. Yeah, like I said, we'll see with the new Mac Pro. It could be one of those things like with Final Cut 10. It's like, people are so excited about it, and it comes out, and then, oh God, it's so expensive. And, oh my God, I can't upgrade the RAM in it, or something crazy like that. I'm sure you can, but there's going to be a change of thinking, I think, when it comes to their top of the line desktop.
How much RAM is good for computer editing or for video editing?
I I would say at least 8 gigs, I think, is perfectly fine. I think the biggest thing with video editing now is the video card, mm-hmm. because a lot of the processing is being passed off to the video card. Mm-hmm. I know Final Cut 10 uses the GPU for a lot of rendering, mm-hmm. and same with Adobe Premiere. So it's more the video card than the RAM. And RAM, I think RAM is really just, unless you are opening up Final Cut plus 50 tabs in Chrome and Photoshop and everything else open at the same time, RAM is really, it's important, but I think it's not as important as it used to be, because mm-hmm. a lot of things are being passed off to the CPU and the GPU. Mm-hmm. And these programs have been optimized so well to take advantage of as little RAM as possible. So,
and SSDs are so fast now too.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
too.
Such a big difference between pulling from RAM and the hard drive versus from an SSD.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the biggest upgrade is to make on your computer is an SSD drive. That's
I have probably waxed on way too much about that before in our previous shows. Yeah. I switched out my optical drive for, you know, like one of those cages that holds an SSD, and I installed a Samsung 830 series SSD, and oh my gosh, it gave my machine new life. There's no way I would have had this computer as long as I've had it if I didn't have that upgrade, because it changes it into a new machine.
It does, absolutely. It you could throw as much RAM into it as possible.
Yeah.
And you would never get to the, I mean, you turn on your computer, it takes like 4 or 5 seconds for it to boot up because it's running off that fast SSD drive. I mean, that's
and opening applications.
Yeah.
You know, instant. It's like you click it, it bounces once and it's open.
Instant. Yeah.
I still am not tired of seeing that happen. I love it.
I know.
It's so fast.
And SSDs are getting cheaper and cheaper by the day.
Yeah.
It's the best thing you can do for your computer. So
it's
RAM, I would say, stick with the default.
Yep.
And SSD, spend a little more money for the SSD drive for sure.
So you're done with the Totally Rad show. You were editing that show forever.
Yeah.
For those people listening who are huge fans of the show, what are you up to now?
Right now, I just recently, 6 months ago, started a job where I'm kind of head of the visual effects studio at Sony Television.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
small in Hollywood?
It's in Culver City, actually.
Okay.
Right near Sony Studios, and basically all the Sony TV shows, all the shows that are produced by Sony Television, which are like Justified and Breaking Bad, and right now we're working on.
Oh, you were working on Breaking Bad?
No, I was not. That I have not worked on Breaking Bad, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know if I'd want to work on Breaking Bad because then I would know what happens.
Oh, yeah, couldn't get to enjoy it as just a show. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a good point.
Because every show that we work on, the last thing I want to do is sit down and watch it because we've been staring at it for so long.
Yeah, right. It's like working on a video game after it's over.
Exactly.
I wonder if those guys ever actually play them.
Oh, probably not.
They're just sick of it.
It's like
or they're like noticing bugs.
Yeah, yeah. It's like working at a Dunkin' Donuts, and then the last thing you want to do is eat a Dunkin' Donut. And I can't imagine being in a world like that where you don't want a donut, especially a Dunkin' Donut.
That's not a world I want to live in.
No, not at all. Absolutely not. So we're working at, like right now we're working on a Showtime show called Masters of Sex, which is mm-hmm. coming out in September.
Mm-hmm. Ooh la la.
Lots of nudity on that show. We've done quite a bit of stuff involving nudity,
uh-huh.
and also working on Unforgettable, which is a CBS show that wraps up pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Necessary Roughness is I think a USA show.
Mm-hmm. You're doing stuff from every network.
Yeah, just about everything. And right now we're working on the Michael J. Fox show that comes out in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And The Blacklist, which is on NBC, coming out in the fall. So we have a lot on our plate, and we're working on a huge variety of different shows right now. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. I mean, I used to be freelance, and I used to work on a lot of these shows, but just as freelance. But now Sony's kind of taken a change in the way that they do things, and they want to do more in-house stuff to save money, basically.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So they turned to me and said, "Hey, do you want to try to steer this ship in the right direction?" So that's basically what I'm doing.
I think they chose the right guy.
Oh, well, thank you. I hope so, too. I hope they did.
Don't screw it up, Mike.
I'll try not to. All right.
Well, this question kind of might seem silly to ask, but do you miss the Totally Rad Show?
I do. What I miss was, like, Comic-Con just happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, PAX
is coming up. Yeah, I'm going to it, and I was hoping you're going to be there, but...
Yeah, I never went to PAX during all the time that we were on the show. I never, mm-hmm. because that was kind of, I think it was, like, over the weekend, and mm-hmm. I would have to edit over the weekend, so mm-hmm. I wasn't able to actually go. But, I mean, E3 just happened. Those type of things I really miss being a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, this would have been a great E3 this past E3,
mm-hmm.
Where we have access to all, you know, the new PS4 and the Xbox. Yeah, I miss all of that. And Comic-Con was a lot of fun because we would have a panel every year at Comic-Con.
Right.
And just being able to meet fans from mm-hmm. all over the world, really, coming up and wanting to take a picture with you and signing autographs and that sort of thing. That was such a special part of my life that I'll never be able to replicate, I don't think. And mm-hmm. so I miss that part of it. Looking back on it now, I don't miss at all having to work on it. So it's taking up my weekends. Like right now, I mean, this is Sunday. We're recording this on a Sunday.
Right.
I would probably be saying right now, it's like, okay, I have to go back to work because I got to get the show out.
Right.
And now I have my weekends free, which is pretty awesome. And I probably wouldn't be in the same job that I am now because I wouldn't have time to do it, a full-time job like that.
Right.
So, the show ending was definitely bittersweet. And, you know, I do wish, you know, that it was still going on for many different reasons. But, you know, it was time. It was time to move on from it and do these cool other opportunities for all of us. I think that... everybody involved in the show has gone on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, for sure, right? I mean, Dan's doing some big movie.
Dan is in the movie business, the next big director, Dan Trachtenberg, which is cool, very cool. And Jeff is doing amazing things. He had that huge Kickstarter for his new show, which is awesome. Alex is doing all kinds of great directing work as well and mm-hmm. making his own stuff. So. You know, it finally kind of took the chains off of us, I think, mm-hmm. a little bit to explore different things. And so that's a good thing.
Is that why you guys decided to start to wrap it up? I mean, it felt abrupt.
Yeah.
And I asked Jeff about it and he didn't really elaborate a lot. And
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if you could tell us more of like what was like the thing that happened that made you guys go, OK, we're done.
Well, I mean, it was a combination of different things. I think that it really was. It just came down to the fact, like, we right now is a good time to if we're going to go out, let's just do it now before it gets tired and stale and mm-hmm. Nobody wants to watch us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the right time, I think. I wish we had done it a little differently and not been so abrupt about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were different factors involved with that, but I wish we'd given everybody a lot more notice about
mm-hmm.
it. That's kind of my only regret about the whole thing is that 1 week we're like, hey, the show's ending. You've got one more week. Sorry.
Exactly.
Bye.
This show that some of us had been involved with, you know, for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really a shame. And I wish it hadn't happened that way because I wish we'd had more time to just kind of we would have done a lot more cool stuff to just close everything out. Kind of
you guys could have done so many things.
Yeah, yeah.
But the way you wrapped it up, and I told Jeff this when he was on the show, was perfect. I mean, it was poignant. It was well thought out. The graphic. I don't know what kind of graphic magic you worked at the end there. How you did what you did, but it was great. I mean, everyone saw it was smiling huge. It just could not have ended in a more perfect way.
Yeah.
It's such an iconic scene.
Yeah. Yeah. That was literally, we were trying to figure out like for hours trying to figure out what's the last thing that people are going to see. What can we do? And, mm-hmm. I forgot who came up with the idea.
I'm getting goosebumps just right now as we're talking about this. Whose idea was it?
I don't know. I honestly don't remember. I'd have to look back through some emails to try to figure out who came up with the initial idea. But I think also somebody came up with the idea and we weren't all on board. We're like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should do something more like this. And then the further we got into it and the further I started like putting it together, I'm like, oh, my God, this is absolutely perfect. This is the perfect way to end the show because this is how Star Wars ended. This is the most, you know, iconic part of the ending of that trilogy, mm-hmm. or I guess the end or the ending of the former trilogy. I don't know.
Well, I should say for those that haven't seen it, if you want to see it and you don't want me to spoil it,
hit stop now.
And maybe skip ahead 30 or 40 seconds. So yeah. You guys basically redid the end where like Anakin reappears and Yoda reappears like those like, you know, force spirits. I don't even know if that's what you call them.
Yeah.
And then Luke's standing there looking at him. And then what were you?
I was Yoda sitting.
You were Yoda. You were like a little mini. Oh, that was so funny. well, that was great. I missed the show terribly, and I know a lot of the fans do as well, because it was just, especially when you guys went to the daily format, mm-hmm. It was just, you know, part of every day. Just, you know, I got home, watched, you know, Totally Rad Show for 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's it was amazing.
With the daily format, I think there was a lot, you know, we'd been doing the hour-long format and the weekly format for so long, it was hard for people to change into a new routine, but just like you said, I think it became more a part of everybody's daily life because it was like, well, every day I've got a Totally Rad Show to watch.
Right. I think it made it easier to watch too, because you know sometimes with an hour show, you just don't have time to listen to the whole thing, and then you get behind.
Mm-hmm.
And these were just so consumable. And if you missed one, you just missed one. It was just a small segment. And I'm not into comic books, so like I just wouldn't watch those ones.
Right.
So it just made it easier to watch the show.
Yeah, I think it was a good change for us, definitely, because you could pick and choose what you really wanted to watch, and you didn't have to sit through stuff you didn't want to watch or fast forward through it.
Which was hardly any of it.
of course. Yeah, no, I mean, all of it was amazing, so you'd want to watch every bit of it.
Yeah, exactly. Even the comic books. I'm like, I don't even like comic books.
Yeah, there you go.
I just want to watch the witty banter and the amazing motion graphics happening in the background.
Oh, thank you.
Well, hey, Mike, let's wrap it up there.
Sure.
I really want to thank you for coming on. It was a real treat for me personally.
Thank you for having me.
To talk to you. And especially because on that show, you didn't really have a lot of lines.
Exactly. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But every once in a while, you saw my face, but not
every once in a while. Yeah. You know, but it was so infrequent. I remember when I saw the panel at PAX in Seattle, I think it was maybe the first year you guys came, and there was some blonde guy standing there operating the camera, and I was like, "That I don't think that's Mike," but I wasn't really sure because I never actually saw your face.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought maybe it was him, and then surely enough, it wasn't. But
that was me.
If people wanted to, follow you on social media, like where would they find you if they wanted to ask you questions about video editing, that type of thing?
Sure. Yeah. My Twitter is Snoop Mikey, SnoopMikey, like Snoop Dogg, but it's Snoop Mikey. and that's for Twitter. Same on you can follow me on Facebook if you want. It's facebook.com/MikeGaines. And then my website with all my visual effects work on it is gainsimages.com. That's my visual effects company.
Are you still doing freelance work?
I am. I'm basically at the job that I'm at now. I do oversee the department, but I also still work on shots, and that's still all kind of done as freelance. So it's all still through Gaines Images. So that company is still alive and well.
Awesome.
I get to work on cool stuff.
Great. Well, thanks again.
No problem.
As I said, really wonderful having you on. And maybe you'll come back?
Absolutely. Hey, I mean, I love to geek out about
yeah, maybe
Apple
you could be
stuff.
On like the normal, just the cult or the cult cast regular, you know, and just
that
we can just talk
cool.
about Apple news and stuff and apps
oh,
and
that'd
stuff.
Be awesome.
We would
awesome.
Love to have you on. And you talk so much. This is great. I'm really enjoying it. You know, we get guests on where I got to pull out my pliers and pull teeth,
right.
but you're
they,
just...
they say yes.
Yes.
No.
I spend 10 minutes constructing a really thoughtful question, and their answer is no. And then I get a... dry yeah. cough.
Yeah, the cough. It's like, okay, next question.
Well, hey, I want to thank everyone who has stuck through the second hour of CultCast to listen to the segment. I hope you enjoyed it. We're actually planning on bringing you more segments like this from just, you know, amazing, you know, Apple-centric people that are involved in the community and use the products, and we'll have more of these to bring you. But until next time, this has been the CultCast, the second hour, and we'll catch you guys next time.